This is David Hausman, and I'm here at the Public Service Commission in Kigali, Rwanda, on March 10th, 2010, with Angelina Muganza, the Executive Secretary of the Public Service Commission. Ms. Muganza, have you agreed to be recorded for this interview?
Yes, I have.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much. I wanted to start by asking you about your career and about the jobs that you had that led you to your current position here at the Commission.
Thank you very much, David. As you said, my name is Angelina Muganza. I'm the Executive Secretary for the Public Service Commission. This week I'm in this post for 2 years. Before then, I was a Minister of State in charge of labor. A Minister of State here is probably what you call a Secretary of State, a secretary in the U.S. And I did that job for about 5 years. My responsibilities then were to look at the labor laws, to look at issues of policy in promoting employment in Rwanda. Given the fact that most of our people are illiterate, then we had over about 50% of our population who are illiterate. You found that most of them were agricultural workers, and you know we have limited land in Rwanda. So my major concern was to put in place policies and programs that promote employment, particularly for the youth and women. Also including fighting child labor, because in poor communities, the tendency is to have children work for money, for little money. And that does not only affect their health, but also affects their growth and their education. So that was one of the programs I spearheaded in the Ministry of Public Service and Labor. Of course, the labor issues also included working with trade unions, issues of labor inspectorate, ensuring that security in the workplace is taken care of, so that people can work in comfortable places, clean places, safe places. So I did that for about 5 years, as I said.
And were you involved with the retrenchment efforts that took place during that time?
Yes, I was involved with the retrenchment that took place in 2006. But as I said, I was a Minister of State in charge of labor. So there was a minister, Professor Manas, whom you met, and prior to him, another minister, who were directly responsible for the organization of the public service. And one of the issues there was the retrenchment. Of course, we had to talk to the trade unions particularly, because they thought that retrenchment was going to have a negative impact on the workers. And I took lead to talk with the trade unions. They thought that people were going to be thrown on the streets. This is what they said. But actually, the government had the concern that the public service must be an efficient institution, not an institution that recruits everybody who comes, regardless of numbers and capacities, but have people who fit well in specific positions and who can be paid better salaries. Because after the retrenchment, less staff remained, probably one third. Their salaries were more than twice, were increased. For example, the lower cadres who were earning like 50,100 francs, they jumped from 50,100 francs to about 100,100 francs, four times. And those who were retrenched, the fears of the trade unions were not correct, because they were helped to go to school. Many of them went to the universities under government funding. Others went into development projects, and they were given loans. under government guarantee, and others started their small business. There was a good example of government drivers, because the government, one of the reforms the government did was to remove the vehicles, the government vehicles. We went to zero fleet, and all the government vehicles were sold, except very few operational vehicles. And that meant also the drivers had to be retrenched. And the drivers formed tax cooperatives. And many of them were saying, wow, if you gave me a job back to the government, I wouldn't come, because now I'm the boss of myself. So there was a lot of benefit for the government and for the workers as well, who stayed and those who left. Those who stayed because they got better remuneration, and their jobs were more defined. And those who left because they went back to the universities, they went into development projects, they formed cooperatives. So there was really a double benefit on both sides.
Can you say more about how the negotiations with the union worked? Mm. How did you start to address their fears?
Okay, normally what we did, we have in Rwanda a tripartite forum. And the tripartite forum includes government representatives, workers' representatives, and employers' representatives. So the practice has always been, in the spirit of good governance, that before a policy is put in place, before laws are put in place that affect the workers, the lead ministry invites the two sides, the workers representatives and the employers representatives. So this is what we did. We invited them, and we shared with them the government reform program. And so questions came up. So we tried to answer questions, but you could see that initially they really didn't want this to take place. But we had a series of meetings, we had a series of radio programs, so that we debated on the radio. Particularly, I think, 2006, around Labor Day, we went on TV and radio, and we debated, and people were calling in, and were answering. The trade unions were showing their concerns, and the government was showing how it cares for all citizens. So it can, in promoting employment, the government showed that actually we cannot promote employment by having so many people within the civil service paid so little, but we would rather have a lean civil service that is effective and efficient. And then the others are helped to go to school, are helped to go to join the private sector. So there were a series of discussions, both one-to-one, on television, on radio, in meetings. And when it happened, it's the civil servants themselves that were giving testimonies that they were very happy with this program. Yeah, so I think it had its own challenges, though. One of the challenges was the limited funding for this program, because almost everybody now wanted to go into business. But there was limited funding for all the people who had small and medium projects.
Mm. And do you remember, was there any particular moment when you began to persuade the unions and the civil servants that this was going to be good for them? Or were there any particular concessions that you made to the unions during the process of consultation?
Yeah, I think that I was... The whole spirit of the tripartism is to the dialogue. So in dialogue, normally you try to persuade people to understand the other side, and to convince them that actually the government had all the citizens at heart. It wasn't a government that is going to make people suffer. So I think during this dialogue, there was a lot of there was a lot of convincing, trying to convince, because they came from a point of view that this was going to be to have negative effects. So, yes, I think I did the convincing, but this is the convincing one-to-one.
Are there any, you know, anecdotes or particular moments that you remember of convincing people?
Yeah, there was one time we invited the executive secretary of the trade union in the minister's office, because I think there was an incident where a meeting and they walked out. The trade unions walked out. And we didn't want this to be like that, because there was a need to dialogue. So we had a meeting in the minister's office then with the executive secretary of one of the big trade unions. I don't know why you why specifically you want that, but there was a particular meeting. What I remember is that they left not very much convinced. So it was a progress. It was like, let's wait and see. Is it true this reform is going to benefit the workers, or it's only the government? Yeah, but I think gradually they were convinced that this was a well-thought program. I think so. Yeah.
And programs like this are typically very expensive, with the severance packages, or in this case, loans and scholarships provided. Mm. Where did the financing come from for this?
I think all this was financed by the government. I don't think I know how much was spent. Actually, what I didn't say is that for every staff who was retrenched, he was paid his 6 months' salary, two-thirds of his 6 months' salary. So it meant somebody had 6 months where you get the two-thirds of your salary. So I think the funding of the two-thirds of their salaries, the funding going back to universities, the funding, the guarantee fund, they got a guarantee to borrow. Each person would borrow like 5,100,000 francs, which is approximately $10,000, about slightly less. But the guarantee was given by the government. So I think all this came from the government budget. I don't know how much it is. Maybe details you can get from the Minister of Public Service and Labor. But the government had to invest in this. It wasn't like it's money to be thrown. It was an investment, both to make the civil service better and to support the retrenched staff to be better workers in the future.
Great. Let me ask you now about the Public Service Commission.
Let me tell you something. Before then,
okay,
since you asked me my career, before then I was a minister for gender and women development. That is from 1999 to 2002. I think this was a great reform also in our country. It's not a civil service reform as such, but it was a reform of recognizing women's participation in the development of the country, and recognizing also that they have equal rights. Women have equal rights as citizens. So my role in that ministry was to put in place institutions that promote women participation, to reform the laws, particularly the inheritance law, a law that allows women to inherit from their parents and from their spouse. Before then, in Rwanda, customary, and later on in the laws of Rwanda, women would never inherit from their parents. Just imagine you have one daughter, two daughters, three daughters, four daughters, and you are a millionaire. You would never pass your property to your daughters. it would go to their cousins, your nephews. So that's a big reform in this country. So I did that also.
When you were in that job, did some of the reforms you did there affect hiring practices in the civil service in terms of gender?
Not so much because the civil service, we as a country, again, when you look at the people who have education, higher education, university education, the big percentage are men. Again, coming from the background that as women would never inherit, also they were not so much invested in education. So we have had fewer educated women. And on the other hand, you want the civil service to be very professional, so you do not hire people on quota, like let me have 50-50% men and women. So the civil service goes through a rigorous competition, recruitment competition. And in that case, you take the winner. You take the winner because you must go by merit, you must be fair, you must be objective. So in that case, you find that we get fewer and fewer women as we go up the ladder. Yeah, if you're looking for a secretary, most likely you are going to get women. If you're looking for accountants, cashiers, you will get women, maybe 50-50. But as you go up and you're looking for scientists, you're looking for directors, you're looking for researchers, you get more men. But because we are aware of that, the government took a decision that if two candidates have equal marks, and one is a woman, another one is a man, the woman is given the preference.
Great. So now let me ask you about the Public Service Commission. Can you describe what the central issues and challenges facing the commission were when you became executive secretary 2 years ago?
Well, the biggest challenge was that there was no commission. It was the beginning. When I became the executive secretary, my biggest challenge was to start the Public Service Commission. It was a new institution. It is still a new institution, 2 years old now. And the objective of the two or three major objectives of the commission, one is to make sure that the government gets personnel who are recruited based on merit, as I've just said, in an objective manner and well understood by everybody. That had its own challenges. One big challenge was that before 1994, with all the divisive politics of this country, it was so acceptable that recruitment was being done based on who knows who. Or where do you come from? Or whose son or daughter are you? And after 1994, after the genocide, the reforms that came into this country included the reforms of good governance, economic reforms, and one of them was the establishment of the Public Service Commission. It took time. The Constitution of 2003, Rwandans came up and voted the Constitution in a referendum. And one of the so many articles, Article 181, mentions the Public Service Commission. So that means that Rwandans wanted the Public Service Commission to come in the Constitution, not just any other law. Of course, later on, the law that governs how we function was put in place in 2007. So the biggest challenge was the mindset. People were so much used that you get a job because somebody knows you, not because of your competence. So that was one big challenge. The second, of course, that goes with the fact that it is a new institution. So we had to do things right. We had to explain what we are doing so that gradually, hopefully fast, people understand that this is a very fair commission based that recruits based on merit and without any bias whatsoever. 2 years down the road, I don't think everybody believes what I'm saying. Yeah, but I know the leadership of this country does. Yeah, because I do not get any influence from anybody of who should be in which position. People who are looking for jobs, yes, they try to call some of our staff. They come here, but what we do, we explain to them. So if you call us that, oh, I've applied for a job, can you help me? Our role is to tell them how we do it. Mm. And often we have meetings also, we have radio programs, we have conferences, trainings to explain what we do. So that's a major challenge. Because when you are doing a job, you always want people to believe what you are doing. Yeah.
And how did recruitment work just before the commission was established? So in 2005, 2006?
From 1995, recruitment was being done by the ministry in charge of public service and labor. And what the ministry did actually was to supervise how other institutions are recruiting their own staff. And of course, the ministry was trying to make sure that it's also done fairly and on merit. But the fact is that it was so much decentralized, and many people still had their mentalities. So I wouldn't say it was done perfectly well. That's why actually the Public Service Commission was, its establishment was a major concern, so that there is one central agency that does the recruitment. That's how we started. Although gradually we are doing oversight, but still the standardization is much focused and clearer than it was before. Mm.
Can you describe a little more how recruitment used to work, and what sorts of, was there a large range in how well the recruitment processes worked in different ministries before the establishment of the commission?
I wouldn't be very, very specific here, but there were many complaints. There were many complaints from the candidates themselves. So, for example, the issue of advertising. Normally, an advert must be clear, must be known by everybody, and must stay for quite some time so that people respond. But there were cases where people would not advertise for posts. Of course, people would come. But if there's no advert, then you are not sure whether the people who have come, you are getting the right people. Then setting of written exam and oral interview was done within the institution, and not always supervised, so that the idea of checks and balance was not always in all the institutions. Then the idea of giving the best a job. Often you would find there are complaints that, oh, I was number one, but I was not given the job. And often it comes some excuses from the examiners, but we believe and we insisted later on that number one should be given the job, unless you find maybe the referees are telling you something contrary about his behavior or his action in his previous job. So there were different things that people complained about.
And when you first came here and you were about to begin setting up the commission, Was there an effort to sit down and plan the process of establishing the commission?
Yes, when the commission was given its leadership, by the way, the leadership of the commissioner is the board of commissioners. We have seven board of commissioners who are not civil servants, who are private, who do not seek jobs in the civil service. So when the commission was established, I worked with them with the support of the Minister of Public Service and Labour, where we were then, and being the police ministry. And we had support from a project that was within the Ministry of Public Service and Labour, funded by the FID. So we sat down and we defined the way forward for the commission, and we came up with a plan of action for 2008, because the commission was established in March and we started operating in May. So we had a plan for 2008, which was our first plan.
And where would you say the impetus for the formation of the commission came from within the government? Did it come from the ministry? Did it come from the presidency?
Well, vaguely, I would say it came from the leadership of this country. Of course, we attribute so much to our president, he being visionary, looking at issues of good governance. But of course, he works with many people around him in his party, in RPF, in the government. But the idea of the commission came from the whole leadership policy of good governance. Of course, the president is at the head of that. And this is actually a discussion that took place between 1998 1999. There were discussions in the country under the leadership of the government to look at where are we taking our country. And this is how different programs came up. Programs of justice, programs of good governance, economic programs, establishment of offices like the Rwanda Revenue Authority, the Auditor General, the Ombudsman. We had like probably 1 or 2 years where leaders would meet every Saturday to discuss the governance of this country. So that's how even the commission came up, but with many others. It's not only the commission alone.
And then, did you introduce the new recruitment policies all at one time, or was there an effort to phase them in gradually?
I think, in 2004, actually there was a presidential decree on how recruitment should be done. So by the establishment of the commission, we didn't start from zero. We started from this order. And our role was to make it real, to make it actual. Because having a law or an order is one thing, but making it operational was another. So I would say we started our work based on that order. Of course, there are some other things that we introduced. For example, when you hire an accountant, maybe you have 50 applicants. Maybe of those 50, 10 will pass, will get the mark, the expected mark, over 70%. But normally you hire only one person because this is the person you are looking for. So in the past, it would be like that. You hire the best, but the remaining nine are thrown away because the hiring was taking place in different institutions. But now that we know all exams that are taking place in the country. Okay? If you find that you have 10 successful accountants, one is hired, but nine are put in a data bank. So when another institution applies, writes to us, we don't advertise this post because we have one to give to this institution in our data bank. So some innovations came up because we were looking at recruitment now as from one source. Initially, recruitment was being taken care of by all the institutions, and nobody cared that Ministry X or Institution Y has been recruiting. No, they are recruiting, that's their business. I'm also going to recruit for my own institution. But now, the Public Service Commission, because now we receive reports and we monitor all the recruitment. So people who have had successful marks, we do not throw them away. So this is a good way in a sense that it saves us money. It saves the government money because you do not advertise a vacant post when you have successful candidates on one side, but it also saves frustration. It saves people from being frustrated. Because if you have done an interview and you are successful, you do not go applying again and again because there is another advert that is looking for the same profile. Mm. So gradually we see some innovations and which are not against the law at all, and we use them. Mm.
And can you describe the new system of recruitment?
Okay.
Fairly basically.
It's like this. I think the government has over 200 institutions. These include the ministries, starting from up, the president's office, the parliament, the Supreme Court, the prime minister's office, and the ministries. And then there are government agencies, like we are a government agency. But there are many other government agencies and they have line ministries. So, and we have 30 districts. So all those, except the districts, when they have a vacant post, they write to the Public Service Commission. They say, can you please advertise this post? We are looking for an administrative assistant, and this is the profile of the job. He, she must be a trained secretarial, must have computer skills, must blah, blah, blah. So when we receive, and then they copy to the Minister of Public Service and Labor. Why do they copy to the Minister of Public Service and Labor? It's the Minister of Public Service and Labor that is a custodian of all the organigram. It means you have posts that have been approved. If you are a minister of education, you cannot just say, oh, I'm looking for this and this. No, there are specific posts that have been approved. So the Minister of Public Service and Labor is copied this letter so that they can check that you are not creating new posts because probably want to put in somebody else. So when we receive this letter, we advertise this post. Of course, often maybe we've received four letters that week, so we put them together. So we do an advert, and we send it into two newspapers here, which are commonly read. That's the New Times and the Imvahunsha. Imvahunsha is the Rwandese paper, the Kinyarwanda paper. But we also post this on some websites. Unfortunately, we don't have a website yet, but we put it on the website of Rwanda Workforce Development Authority. We put it on the Menafet Diaspora website to encourage Rwandans who are in diaspora who may want to come home to apply. And this takes 15 days. But in this advert, we tell them where to put their application letters. and what to include in the application letters. Then after that, the institution which has received these applications will do shortlisting. And shortlisting is basically to see whether the applicant actually fulfills what was given in the job profile. Then after the shortlisting...
And that the shortlisting is done by each individual institution?
By each individual institution. But we have staff of the Public Service Commission allocated to the institutions. We've written to them, this is the staff whom we should work with. So our staff, each of our staff has over 10 institutions. So they make arrangement when to do the shortlisting, and then a report is written. After the shortlisting, you inform the people who have been pre-selected, and there is a written exam, and the written exam is set by professionals selected by that institution. They may be from that institution, they may be other experts hired through the tender process. One thing that we do, we ensure that a paper where you write your answers does not have your name, but is coded. That's the role of our staff, to ensure that the codes are put on the paper, and the code and the name, there is a piece of paper which has now the code and the name, and our staff keeps it. So whoever is going to mark will not know who he, she is marking. And we match these after the marking is completed. That's when our staff takes the piece of paper with name and code and matches with the answer sheet.
Great. And can you describe what it was like instituting these changes for the first time? So how did you communicate to ministries the changes and get them to follow the new procedure?
Mm. Okay, when the commission was put in place in 2008, the first person to write was the minister in charge of public service. He wrote to all government institutions, reminding them or telling them that from now onwards they should not do their own recruitment unless delegated by the Public Service Commission, because that's their duty. Actually, now even these ones who are doing recruitment, we delegated them. We should be doing it ourselves. So, but they are doing it on delegation. That's why they report to us. So the minister sent this letter to all government institutions as a hard copy. It was passed over the radio and TV. Then, like a month later, we also sent another one, because we realized that not everybody was informed. Then later on, we had radio programs, as I said. But last year, 2009, was a very hectic year. We started in March, and we had a meeting at national level. Then we moved to all districts. Not to all districts. We moved to all provinces. But in every province, including Kigali, five of them, all the personnel, the human resource managers, and the executive secretaries of the districts participated. One of the biggest objectives was to tell people how recruitment is done. Yeah. And to assure them that that's the best way to do it. Good for them too.
And before this happened, did you have problems with cooperation from ministries and agencies?
No. When the minister passed over this, it was so easy, because once the ministers understand it, and this is something that was discussed in the cabinet, so once the ministers were the first people to know that the roles have changed. The first institutions we hired for was the Prime Minister's office, you know? The Prime Minister's office, the new ministries of youth, East African Community, Minister of Cabinet Affairs, those were new ministries in 2007, 2008 and 8. So it was easy for them. It was difficult for agencies, because agencies tend to think they are autonomous, but still they are governed by the law of civil servants. So those ones, we had meetings with them, we went to the districts. It's never difficult to pass over the information in Rwanda.
Why not? Is there anything particular about Rwanda that
yes.
makes it easier?
Yeah. It's so easy because, maybe not limited to those two reasons. One, it is a small country. Two, we speak the same language. So you don't have to translate into 90 or 100, 400 languages like it is in other countries.
And was there not resistance to the new regulations from people who had been recruiting their friends, say?
I guess there was, but you know, the resistance, once it doesn't come up, you don't care. And it couldn't come up because it was not justified.
But were there not
there
people
was so
who...
much, there was so much excitement from the job seekers, from the workers. They were very happy. Mm.
And there weren't examples where people tried to subvert the process?
Yes. You know, they could do it differently. They were saying, oh, but is the Public Service Commission able to recruit everybody? But do you have all the skills? Can you hire doctors and nurses and teachers and agriculturists? And, you know, there were questions like those. Does the Public Service Commission has all the competence? But of course, the answers were there. No institution has all the competence, but you look for it. Yeah. Then, of course, there were some initially, like, the Public Service Commission is getting late. And actually, when we started, we were getting late. We were delaying, like taking 2 months before an institution gets staff, because we hadn't gotten our own staff anyway. Yeah. But there was such a complaint, which were correct, but often which were like saying, why don't we do away with it? It's creating problems. But they couldn't say it's creating problems because it is taking away my responsibility. No, they were looking for other legitimate reasons, like, do you have all the competence? Why are you taking long? And we're saying, no, we don't have all the competence, but we can look for the competence. We are taking long, yes, but it's a short time. We are recruiting our own staff. So.
And are there still some delays in the process?
No. Now it's very quick.
So how long does the process take from beginning to end?
The process from beginning to end actually can take like even 2 months. Yeah. But even those who are saying it is taking long, often it was within the limits. They couldn't take shorter. But we are revising the law. We are revising the presidential decree so that it takes shorter than that. Mm. And the idea of having a data bank also helps us not to take long, because there are some institutions that write and say, I'm looking for an accountant, and the following day you get an accountant. Mm. But there are some posts also that take long. For example, rare skills, if you advertise them and there are no applicants, or there are applicants who do not finally fulfill the requirements, then you have to re-advertise again. Mm.
And you mentioned that districts don't send you letters when they have vacancies.
Mm.
Are you involved at all with recruitment for districts or
no,
not?
No. But this one, we have delegated the districts to do that for the time being. And our fears weren't high because there are district councils. So district councils, at the district level, the recruitment goes through the same process. The executive does the advertisement. The interviews, written and oral, are given, but there is approval by the district council, and then approval by the governor. So, in a way, we realize that there are still the decentralization law put in place some checks and balance. So we said, since we are starting, let's move slowly, start with central government, delegate to the districts to continue the way they've been doing it, but give us a report. By the way, all the process, be it district or national ministries, agencies, it all leaves room for appeal. If a candidate or candidates feel that they were not fairly treated, they appeal to the commission.
So even from the local level, they can appeal to you?
They appeal to the commission, yeah. And if an appeal is lodged, then the commission follows it up from beginning to end.
And even though it's decentralized, is the procedure for recruitment at the local level similar to the one that you follow?
Yeah, because the presidential decree is, they are civil servants. Yeah, they are governed by what we call the General Statute of the Civil Servants of Rwanda.
And I was told that the Rwanda Association of Local Government Authorities manages some of the recruitment for local governments. Do you work together with them at all?
No, we've exchanged letters and we've discussed. But RARGA is the Rwanda Association of Local Government is hired. A district has a choice to give the job to RARGA or not. But I was told they realized that RARGA is well conversant with the local government and they are cheaper. So often they are given that. And the report we get from districts shows also what RARGA went through, and we have the right to question anything.
So do you get a report on each appointment made at the district level?
We get a recruitment report from each district, but we have questions. Actually, we want to meet the relevant ministries to see at what time does the report come to us. I've realized that the report comes to us after recruitment, hiring is complete. But I want to see if we can change that so that the report comes after the interviews are completed, but before the successful candidates are hired. Yeah.
Great. Well, one last, more general question. If you were giving advice to someone else setting up a public service commission elsewhere, what are the things you might advise them about or warn them about before they started?
Yeah, I think I would advise them to go progressively. Progressive in a sense, like, deal with certain institutions first and let everybody know who are the first ones, who are the second ones, who are the third ones. Of course, it has its own risks that meanwhile the institution is in place, but some malpractices might continue somewhere else. Yeah. The second advice I would give them would be to have maybe more board members. We have 7, but I think it's important to have more board members and maybe apportion them some responsibilities. Yeah. We've talked about recruitment, but you have also the appeal. The appeal can come from recruitment, but from management of civil servants also, that is unfair. So I would propose more board members. I've seen this in South Africa. They have more board members. And I think they have like 12. In South Africa, there are some even responsible for provinces.
What were some of the problems with implementing it so quickly and across the board here in Rwanda?
The problems. We worked so hard. We worked so hard and we got overworked. It was more of there wasn't a problem. It was that there was sort of hectic. Of course, it came in place also when you were doing reforms. So when you are doing reforms, there's a lot of work. Yeah. Then then I would also advise that they start with publicity. Public relations officers, researchers. We started with recruitment and appeals. But I think starting with research and public relations and communication can make things move faster.
Great. Well, thanks so much. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think there's much. I thank you so much for the interest you've had in this subject and in Rwanda. And we hope that this is going to be useful to other countries, particularly those that are emerging from difficulties like we did in Rwanda.
All right, thank you.
Okay, welcome, David.